few stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Oh, yeah, the greed. The $400 million the Koch and their ilk are going to spend on this election cycle. $20 million they spent on promoting that horrible tax scheme. The bus tour that's coming. Cannot wait. And they're going to prop up some horrible candidates. I look at this guy in Illinois back in 2017, the guy who won the primary, the Republican primary for State House. This guy, Steve West, evidently told a radio show that Hitler was right. He's now, 15th district there in Missouri. You got Devin Nunes in a secret recording said, you got Devin Nunes, the Kremlin gremlin, who's the head of the House Intel Committee, telling donors that it's his job to protect Trump at all costs. I mean, just to show you how crazy some of these Republicans are, there's a woman in Florida who evidently claimed to have a degree from the University of Miami in Ohio. Turns out every bit of the diploma was wrong because it was fake. You got Bob Goodlatte, the Republican from Virginia, whose own son maxed out a contribution to the opponent, to the Democrat, to get him out. And, of course, Chris Collins, the Republican from New York, has decided, and probably rightly so, to not seek re-election while being arrested for insider trading. Interestingly enough, the guy that wants to replace him was somebody who said that Michelle Obama should return to being a man and should be let loose somewhere in the outback of Zimbabwe. Yeah, so you're going to go from a thief and a criminal to, an anti-Semite and a hate monger. Very, very cute. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the weekend's events. Also, the state of the GOP and Trumplandia, our good friend Propane Jane. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So, lots of fun this weekend. Unite the right.
That didn't turn out very well for them.
No, it really didn't. It was one of those things where if none of the counter-protesters would have showed up, you would have not noticed there was anything going on.
I mean, you really can't make any of this up, actually.
I wouldn't make this up because it's just bad. There's nothing good that comes out of this. There's nothing good that the mouth-breathing knuckle-draggers who barely made it out of third grade, and we handed them a high school diploma and now live in the backwoods and dream of who knows what, that they now feel entitled to be on my TV screen anytime they have a whim.
Yeah, they do. And, I mean, they're taking cues from their president. I mean, this is what Trump does. And he is notorious for holding these rallies strategically, to get himself out of a bad news cycle. And, I think that his only hope at this point for invigorating, the same level of enthusiasm that he had in 2016 is to really throw out the red meat and to get these really fringe extremists, bigots and, white supremacists of all stripes to come out and to, make a big show of their support for what's going on. But I think what's so interesting is that in some ways they're not getting the same turnout. People have sort of reverted back to that kind of secret hidden place they were in right before the election. They didn't have any signs out. They weren't rolling around with Trump bumper stickers. And then right after the election, they were really proud to say they voted for him. And now all of a sudden, I think when it comes to these really extreme elements, it's getting harder and harder to get them out because of the consequences.
Yeah. And even the crazy ones, they don't want to be outed anymore. They're back in the closet where they belong. Look,
you might not be able
to get rid of them, but at least you'll put them back in a box.
Exactly. I mean, and this is, genuine economic anxiety, right? I mean, they're afraid of losing their jobs, and they're afraid of being ostracized in the community. And that's just, that's not just kind of the low-level base supporter. That's also members of the administration. Jeff Sessions was just here in Houston a Mexican restaurant, which actually used to be one of my favorites, but now I'm sort of questioning their decision-making process. But, you know, they go out to these restaurants and they want to be amongst the people, but then what's happening in reality is that there's a backlash and they're being confronted. And so I think they're all walking on eggshells.
Yeah, we had a woman on last week who confronted Scott Pruitt in D.C., and you know, her story was quite amusing and interesting. And look, you know, I'm all in favor of that.
Was she the one that got him at the restaurant right
yeah.
before he resigned?
Yeah.
Oh, cheers to her.
Yeah, Kristen Mint.
I'll have to catch that.
Yeah, she was fantastic. And look, you know, look, this is the environment that they've created, and they deserve
yeah.
what's coming. You know, what I did find interesting over the weekend, though, is because I was watching little bits and pieces of the coverage, because you know, I did want to, I really, you know, viscerally wanted to ignore it. And there's a big part of me that goes, if every one of us just, you know, kind of just let them, you know, it's kind of like the bear in the woods thing,
yeah,
or the tree in the woods, or however that goes. You know, if nobody pays them any attention and they just, you know, kind of have their little circle, whatever, and you know, do whatever they do, and everyone
yeah.
ignores them, then I think all of us would be much happier.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're fortunate in that there wasn't, you know, a really violent clash or some tragedy that took place that, you know, drew more attention to that event. But I think this is also a situation where the Republican Party really can't afford to have this type of stuff floating around this close to an election. You know, optically, they're still always trying to toe this line.
That we're not racist, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're still trying to pretend.
Exactly, you know, and you have Trump who really doesn't care. I mean, you know, he wants to fire those people up regardless. But I think there are those establishment Republicans that have sense enough to know that in some of these purple districts, that's just not going to go over well. And so I think that they don't necessarily want it to be a story either. And, you know, as far as, like, you know, Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan go, they just kind of want to duck their head down. They want to get these, you know, Supreme Court hearings underway. They don't want to be distracted by any of this red meat, even though they actually need it to get their voters to the polls.
Yeah, they need the cover. They need to keep people all frothed up in the panties and get them to the polls. You're absolutely
exactly.
right.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
you know, as I was watching some of the coverage, I felt sorry for the woman from CNN because, you know, they sent her out there to, you know, hunt down these 24, 23 or however many there were actually to get them to comment. And none of them, I think, were articulate enough to actually string a sentence together to.
Oh, I'm shocked.
To say why they were there. you know, maybe just someone drove them there and dropped them off. But I found it hysterical. The two of them were standing and they had the American flag over their faces where you could just see their eyes a little bit. And, you know, I'm going, these are probably the people who scream about, you know, the women wearing the whatever the
burkas.
Yeah. And the Antifa people covering their faces. I thought these are probably those same people because it was just back in July you had the Republicans who proposed the Unmasking Antifa Act of 2018. And I go, you know, should we be unmasking them?
I mean, but here's the thing. What is the ultimate goal? I mean, you know, I think the Republicans are going to continue to, you know, vilify the people who are anti-Nazi and anti-white supremacists. But at the end of the day, you know, where does that go? I mean, they still look like people who are defending racism and are defending just this rank ignorance that is being espoused by these people. And so I think whatever tactics they're wanting to use, they're really running out of room on the jetway. You know, they don't really have, they can't really take that any further, I don't think.
Yeah, well, it's not like their runway's all that long to begin with.
It's really not. But, you know, I mean, I'm constantly tweeting about the Southern strategy. And, you know, this is something that has been going on for over 50 years.
Sure.
And it's worked, and it's worked for many reasons. But I think Trump in so many ways is like the culmination of those 50 years. And now it's out in the open, and, you know, there really isn't any turning back from that. I think that they're going to have to pick what side are we on. And unfortunately, they're looking like the side of white supremacy. And that's going to bode terribly for them, I think, at the polls.
Well, we'll see what comes on November 6th. And again, I keep saying I hope people will be marching their way to there. But, you know, the weekend was so bad that today Trump had to come out on Twitter and attack wacky Amorosa.
The fact that he calls anyone wacky, I think, is just interesting, right? I mean, he's got no insight.
Well, you know.
He's always projecting. And how wacky was she when, you know, she worked for him for all these, 15 years?
Yeah, he only hires the best people.
Yeah, well, and, you know, as we were talking about last week, we were talking about the third oldest profession and, you know, people of color that sort of sell themselves out. And I think, you know, this is just a really interesting situation. I mean, I think both of them are, you know, buffoons, but you know, beyond that aspect of it, I think for Omarosa, she's someone who, you know, really put herself out there as, like, you know, a representation of black womanhood that is supportive of Trump. And that's something that people, you know, at Fox News and various members of the Republican Party really latch on to and wave that flag, like, okay, see, we have this black woman, and, you know, she's popular, quote-unquote, and she's supportive of Trump. But then ultimately, you know, the mask is lifted, right? Because now that there's been a rift between the two of them and they're at each other's throats, well, then the truth starts to come out, right? And then she starts being honest about, okay, well, there was racism. And of course she overlooked it then because, you know, the money was good or whatever arrangement they had. But, you know, now all of a sudden we get to the facts of the matter. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that she's wrong about some of the things she's saying. I think it just implicates her further as being somebody who sold out.
Yeah. So are we, because you said you're not sure to the extent of their, are we expecting a payoff for her to come up here in the next couple of months? Is this one of the Avenatti's three women that, you know, that he's got on the line who may come out here in the near future?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if she's his type. I would suspect that she's not. You know, from what he says, you know, he likes somebody that, unfortunately to say, looks like Ivanka. That's his
creepy.
Words, not mine.
Thanks for that. That's fairly creepy.
That's his words, not mine.
So did you find it odd that the reports came out that they fired her in the Situation Room?
No, because I don't think that they treat the Situation Room. I saw an article that was like, you know, what is the Situation Room and why was Omarosa in there and, you know, what are presidents typically supposed to do while they're in there? I mean, you know, we're all familiar with Obama in the Situation Room the night that Osama bin Laden was taken out. So we know what the importance of that room.
Right. And look, you know, when we had done our labor history tour back in 2013, we went to the Bush, the George W. Bush Presidential Library, and evidently he stole the Situation Room that he inherited before they built a new one. So, you know, the guy who was the curator of the Presidential Library
yeah.
Took us in there to do interview some people. So we got to sit in what was the Situation Room, and
right.
as he pointed out, you know, at the time, this is the most secure room in the entire country. This is the place where nothing can get hacked into. You know, there's no outside any communication. Everything's, you know, hyper secure and hyper, sanitized or. And I go, you're going to take her into that room, the most secure room in the entire country, to fire her?
Even putting Trump in there. I mean,
he's president. I mean, you can make the argument that, look, we hate it, but he does hold the title of commander-in-chief. And maybe if you're bringing some crayons and paper in there or some toys or something, you can keep him occupied. But I just said, you know, why would you take her into that room? What is it that you're trying? What is it you're trying to hide? You know, what is it that you're, because what do you want her to screw? I don't know, but it just seemed really bizarre to me. My experience, that they would take her into that room.
Well, again, the sanctity of that room was gone on January 20th, 2017, because, yes, he was inaugurated, et cetera, but this man is under investigation and was under investigation at that time for possible collusion with Russia. So as far as we know, he's a Russian plant. We still haven't gotten confirmation that he's not.
I'm with you on that. But, you know, here's the thing.
So even him going in there from day one is like, okay, that's questionable. But even beyond that, this is the reality TV show apprentice room. This is not, this is White House celebrity apprentice room. This is not the Situation Room. And so the what we expect as far as the decorum and the level of security and all of these things that have been the norm up until him getting there, we have to just accept that they are not abiding by any of that. They just simply are not. Everything they've demonstrated to this point is that they follow no rules, they follow no precedent, they follow no tradition. And so, of course, she was in there, and of course she possibly had whatever, you know, device she was using to record all sorts of things. Because who's the gatekeeper of any of these, you know, norms in that White House?
Right. But, you know, you would think, or at least I would think, look, I understand, you know, Trump has no, you know, no idea what, you know, how important these things are or, mm-hmm. or procedure or, mm-hmm. or precedent or any, I get that. But John Kelly, I mean, come on.
Well, when did he get there, right? I mean, I don't know when she made these recordings. I don't know if it was, I don't know the exact date. But what was going on prior to him being there?
No, but he fired her in the Situation Room.
Oh, okay. You're talking about, like, her actually being there and him firing her. That's the story?
Yeah, well, to me, that's, why is she there? I mean, why is she in the Situation Room at all, ever? But even
I mean,
for that.
Why are Jared and Ivanka there? Why was Scaramucci anywhere? I mean, why are any of these people anywhere near any of this?
Yeah, good point.
Why is Kellyanne Conway there? I mean, just, I don't think that the people that we're talking about are capable of making those deductions. I really honestly think that if that person has been an accessory to the president in any way, shape, or form, you know, that person is allowed to be around him either because that person is like a soothing, you know, they're the pacifier for the moment, or, you know, he just wants them to be there and they do anything they need to do to placate this man.
Yeah. But what do you say to the, you know, because originally, there, I guess the report has come out that Trump didn't know that she was being fired.
Yeah, that's what they said initially. And I think that, you know, her, the claim that she's making is that, you know, she has all of these communications between herself and also Jared and Ivanka now, as it's recently coming out, that they were somehow, you know, really regretful and remorseful that, you know, that she had been fired in this way, et cetera, et cetera. They didn't think that was going to happen. They were shocked. And so who knows? And I would imagine that, you know, when John Kelly came in there, then, you know, took it upon himself to clean up the house or, you know, get everybody in line, which he's failed at completely, utterly.
Horribly. No, you're right. It's
horribly.
You know, I had a little bit of hope, you know, him and, you know, Mad Dog Mattis might, you know, whip Trump into shape. Not so much. You know, Mad Dog, you know, sad cat.
And I mean, maybe he goes in there and, you know, Omarosa is the low hanging fruit. She's the, you know, she's a black woman. She's got, you know, maybe some contrary opinion most of the time. She's, you know, from what I've seen of her on television, she doesn't have just the, you know, brightest disposition. And so maybe that was somebody who was easy to get rid of to try to separate Trump from that reality TV show celebrity lifestyle and get him more into the mindset of this is a White House and, you know, this is your administration and these people are supposed to have some qualifications to be in these places. But again, I think it all falls apart because ultimately Trump is a piece of the puzzle that doesn't fit where they're trying to put him either.
No, you're right. And you read some of the stories that come out, like, you know, the fact that he doesn't take presidential daily briefings, and even the ones that they try and dumb down, he still can't read.
It's so embarrassing.
It really is. And you look at the rest of the world going, you know, like, I guess Iran just came out and said that, you know, we're not going to deal with the U.S. anymore because we can't trust you.
Well, you can't. And at the end of the day, I mean, when they are meeting with him, I think it is painfully clear that he doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, I can't remember what country it was from, but the guy just recently had to basically give him flashcards in terms of explaining world trade. And so this is someone who knows absolutely nothing about the job he is tasked with doing. You know, they say the American president is supposed to be like the CEO. He's supposed to be the chief executive. And I think people had this, you know, fantasy and mythology of Trump that he really knows everything and is in control of everything, you know, in his Trump enterprise. And that somehow, you know, he could extrapolate that to the White House. And what's actually being revealed as time goes on is that he doesn't know what he's doing. And he just has all of these minions that run around and kind of do his bidding for him and try to piece together where they can. But it's completely dysfunctional. And I think this is why he, you know, declared bankruptcy six times. I think this is why, you know, we still haven't seen his tax returns. And I think this is why, you know, we're running this gigantic deficit. And those things are not a coincidence. He just doesn't know what he's doing, unfortunately.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, you look at this, and I've heard that frame before, that the president's like the CEO, which I completely disagree with.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the CEO in a corporate structure is the final word. You know, he's the guy. You know, we have, you know, balancing powers. I don't want dictator type people in that office. I want people who know how to use all of the resources around them. And look, I don't expect the president to know everything, but I do expect them to be able to access the resources that we have, because the U.S. president has unlimited resources and the ability to get unlimited information. So there is never anything he should not know with a little bit of curiosity.
Right.
Problem is we've had too many Republican presidents who just don't seem to be all that curious.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, Trump's curiosity doesn't extend much further than, you know, his own self and how people perceive him and what his approval rating is and whether or not he feels like he has a chummy relationship with someone.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, that's an area where, you know, I've always said as a psychiatrist that, you know, his personality traits and what seems to be a clinical personality disorder, or more than one, you know, they are such that it actually inhibits his ability, it impairs his functioning to where he can't really focus on other things because he's so worried about himself and soothing his own ego that he really can't run a business and he really can't run the country. And I think that's just really made self-evident every single day.
Yeah, it's nuts. You know what I'm waiting for, you know, on the other side of this, just a complete, you know, change?
Mm-hmm.
Where are all the religious people saying that God is smiting us now because of our policy? Because I don't know about where you live, but it is raining like it's never rained in here where I live in Pennsylvania. And in New York, you know, evidently where Bedminster is, he couldn't golf over the weekend because it was raining so much. You know, and the flash flooding, and you know, where are the crazy people, you know, the religious people saying, you know, God is angry with Trump and the policies and all that?
I don't know what they're blaming it on right now, because, you know, an easy out would be just to say that it's climate change, but, you know, they can't do that.
Because then you'd have to admit, well, maybe we did it.
I mean, they use what's convenient whenever it's convenient, you know. Yeah. I mean, I think that they're going to keep their mouth shut if it's in contradiction of what they believe.
And finally, speaking of contradiction of beliefs, did you see this article written by Stephen Miller's uncle?
Oh, yes, and I loved it. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I'm going, you know, hypocrite much?
I mean, when your own family's calling you out. But even still, I mean, this chain migration, I mean, Melania's parents just got citizenship. I mean, obviously they're not talking about it.
It's because she got the Einstein Award.
Be best. Be a hypocrite. I mean, you know, they're not even trying to hide it. I think that's the most disgusting part. I mean, they're just doing all of these things. You know, it's do as I say and definitely not as I do.
Yeah, I just thought it was quite comical. I mean, and interesting, and never mind. Maybe it's something about me. Maybe you could analyze me a bit. I still have hope that some of these people who would show up and to these idiotic rallies unite the right, that there's still some hope for them, that maybe some redeemable quality, some bit of humanity, to where they go, you know what, I screwed up.
I mean, I think that there are some people who are just incapable of doing that. I think that they're unable to admit that they were wrong. They're unable to admit that they made a mistake. And I think, in particular, when we're talking about white supremacy and all this bigotry, so much of what people are choosing to believe, they're believing that because they want a validation and an affirmation of their self-image. And they want to believe that, they are superior and that they're better than other people. And so actually accepting that's not the case and admitting that out loud actually just tears their whole world down, because that's everything that it was predicated on for their entire lives, is that belief in their own superiority. And so I think that's why it's increasingly hard to get people like that to come down off of that, unless they actually face some really life-changing circumstances or consequences of holding that belief system. And I think we do see some examples of that where, people are shouting slurs in public, and next thing you know, it ends up on social media and they lose their job. I mean, that's sort of a micro, example of how that happens. But more broadly, until our institutions have that same kind of, accountability, I think that, a lot of this is going to continue because, people just believe what they believe and they're not being confronted on it.
Interesting times ahead and fun times. Mm-hmm. And right here you will be to help us work through it.
Awesome. I absolutely will.
I appreciate the time, Jane. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
As always, good stuff. Our good friend Propane Jane. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. 7 years and I'll go to